Hey, hey, welcome to another edition of Animal Trust, streaming live on internet radio, where our allegiance is to the animals and not to the institutions which raise money and claim to do so on their behalf. I am your host, Nathan Winograd, and you are listening to the voice of a no-kill nation. We'll stand my ground,
and I won't. Animal Trust Radio is brought to you by the National No-Kill Advocacy Center. The No-Kill Advocacy Center is working with progressive shelters nationwide to end the systematic killing of animals in shelters and working just as hard with animal lovers to force change in those shelters which refuse to do so. Visit us on the web at www.nokilladvocacycenter.org. A no-kill nation is within our reach. Sponsorship also provided by Almaden Books, publishers of quality nonfiction books. Almaden Books is proud to bring you Redemption, The Myth of Pet Overpopulation and the No-Kill Revolution in America, the book that has been called powerful, inspirational, a must-read for anyone who cares about animals, and the Bible of the no-kill movement. Available wherever books are sold. Almaden Books. Behind every progressive movement is an intellectual tradition.
Today on Animal Trust Radio, the Dane County Humane Society in Madison, Wisconsin thinks it can kill its way to no-kill. It then expresses surprise at the rising death toll. In part one, Dr. Hurley, Dr. Newberry, Dr. Semmelweis, and death at a Midwest Humane Society. We'll look at how the University of California at Davis Shelter Medicine Program, the Asilomar Accords, and a culture of killing failed the cats of the Dane County Humane Society. In part two, Cornell University, Tompkins County, and the culture of saving lives. We'll look at how Cornell University, the no-kill equation, and a culture of life-saving allowed a similar community to save all but irremediably suffering animals. That's coming up on Animal Trust Radio. Can you kill your way to no-kill? Part 1. Dr. Hurley, Dr. Newberry, Dr. Semmelweis, and death at a Midwest Humane Society. In February 2007, the lead animal shelter in Las Vegas was forcibly closed down due to filthy conditions and dreadful treatment of animals. According to reports, sick animals were left to die in their cages, disease was rampant, and dogs were starving because of lack of food. The animals were not vaccinated on intake, sick animals were not treated, healthy animals were subsequently made sick, there was no isolation for sick animals, and there was a complete breakdown of basic principles of animal care and husbandry. The lead animal shelter is a story of incompetent leadership, uncaring staff, a board of directors which failed to meet its oversight mandate, and a system which refused to put in place the programs and services that save the lives of animals. What happened at Lead Animal Shelter is one side of the worst kinds of animal sheltering. The other side of the same coin are shelters that recklessly kill the vast majority of animals in their care in the face of responsible, proven, life-saving alternatives which they refuse to implement. In other words, run-of-the-mill high-kill shelters such as those that can be found in many cities and towns across America. While the mechanics are different, Lee didn't kill but left the animals to suffer and die on their own, the others simply killed them out of expediency, the underlying dynamic is the same. Both shelters are outdated relics that refuse to modernize and put in place progressive programs and services which allow sheltering to be done humanely, responsibly, while saving the vast majority of dogs and cats. That the lead animal shelter claimed it was no-kill is irrelevant. In the final analysis, it had more in common with high-kill shelters and the leadership and staff who run them. Comprised of starving dogs, rampant disease, filth, animals suffering with no care, the lead animal shelter is not what the no-kill movement represents. In fact, no-kill is the opposite of hoarding. It is the opposite of filth. It is the opposite of lack of veterinary care. The philosophical underpinning of the no-kill movement is to put actions behind the words of every shelter's mission statement. All life is precious. No-kill is about valuing animals, which not only means saving their lives, but means good quality care. It means vaccination on intake, nutritious food, daily socialization and exercise, fresh and clean water, medical care, and a system built to find them all loving new homes as soon as possible. No-kill does not mean business as usual, minus the intentional killing. It means modernizing shelter operations so that animals are well cared for and keep moving through the system efficiently and effectively and into loving new homes. At the open admission no-kill shelter I ran, the average length of stay for animals was 8 days. We had a return rate of approximately 2%. We reduced the disease rate by nearly 90% from the prior administration. We reduced the killing rate by 75%. No animal ever celebrated an anniversary in the facility, and we saved 93% of all impounded animals. In short, from 2001 to 2004, we brought sheltering into the 21st century. But there are those who have seized upon the lead animal shelter fiasco to promote their own agenda of defending an antiquated model of sheltering developed in the 19th century, which is based on killing, sweeping animals under the rug, more accurately, into the back room to be killed, based on archaic notions of adoptability, turning volunteers away, and other regressive and obsolete practices. They are using the lead animal shelter to denounce the no-kill paradigm by intimating, sometimes directly, more often indirectly, that lead is the natural outcome of trying to end the killing of savable dogs and cats in shelters today. And two of the leading voices of this point of view are Dr. Kate Hurley and Dr. Sandra Newberry, veterinarians for the University of California at Davis Shelter Medicine Program. This is a betrayal of the worst kind. Even the Humane Society of the United States called LEAD one of the worst it's ever seen. It was extreme, even in the eyes of an agency which accepts staggeringly high levels of killing as the norm. Therefore, using such an extreme situation as an example of no-kill, of what the natural alternative to ending the killing today would be, is egregious. By denigrating no-kill as akin to warehousing and ignoring the protocols of shelters which have truly achieved no-kill, Drs. Hurley and Newberry appear to be arguing for nothing more than a nation of shelters firmly grounded in killing, a defeatist mentality that is inherently unethical and antithetical to animal welfare. To imply that no-kill means warehousing, therefore, is a cynicism which has only one purpose: to defend those who are failing at saving lives from public criticism and public accountability by painting a picture of the alternative as even darker. At the Las Vegas shelter, a wholly incompetent and uncaring shelter director refused to vaccinate animals on intake, failed to practice basic animal care and husbandry, refused to treat sick animals, failed to isolate sick from healthy animals, failed to clean and sanitize, allowed animals to languish with illnesses and injuries, and failed to put in place the programs and services which vastly increase adoptions and life-saving. This is not no-kill. This is animal cruelty. But HSUS, with Drs. Hurley and Newberry in tow, came in with needles blazing and oversaw the killing of 1,000 animals. The lead animal shelter is now killing dogs and cats after only 72 hours, and officials there claim they are doing so based on the recommendations of the HSUS team. This not only replaces one evil with another, it even violates HSUS's own long-standing recommendation that shelters should hold animals for at least 5 days. But if the no-kill model should be rejected, as Dr. Hurley and even Dr. Newberry seem to think, what do they recommend instead? For Dr. Newberry, the answer is simple and can be found right in the shelter of her own hometown of Madison, Wisconsin, at the Dane County Humane Society, where both she and Dr. Hurley used to work, a shelter she currently consults with, and where her own model of sheltering is currently being practiced. Let's see what the Newberry model means for the cats of the Dane County Humane Society. This year, over a period of several weeks, one by one, 73 cats were taken off of the adoption floor of the Dane County Humane Society in Madison, Wisconsin, to a room outside of public view. One by one, each was injected with poison from a bottle marked Fatal Plus. One by one, their bodies went limp and slumped to the table. One by one, each was put to death. Why were these 73 cats killed? They were killed, according to recent reports, because the shelter decided it was going to keep every other cage empty and curtail other life-saving programs, reducing the number of cages on its adoption floor by half. But since cats occupied those cages or were under the care of those other programs, they needed to be slaughtered first. This was necessary in order to, quote, save more cats. That's right. According to shelter bureaucrats, by killing cats, by cutting the capacity of the shelter in half, they were professing the Orwellian logic that more cats would be saved. Pam McLeod-Smith is the director of the Dane County Humane Society. She is also one of the architects, drafters, and an initial signatory of the Asilomar Accords, a document produced by HSUS and others in 2004 as a vision for the future of animal sheltering. Here we see what the future means for homeless animals under the Asilomar Accords. At this model Asilomar Accords shelter, every other cage is intentionally kept empty, despite the fact that disease can be reduced by fostering sick animals, by isolating sick animals, by reducing disease rates through vaccination, proper handling, good cleaning and sanitizing protocols, and by reducing animal stress through daily interaction and socialization by volunteers. At the same time that the number of cages was reduced by half, however, the shelter restricted adoption hours and eviscerated its foster care program. In response to a public backlash, the architect of this mass carnage claimed, quote, "I am not in any way advocating for more euthanasia," end quote, which is more doublespeak since this is exactly what is being advocated. What else is the option when the number of cages is reduced by half, while the shelter is scaling back other opportunities to save them? Opportunities like adoption days and a foster care program. According to Dr. Newberry, by killing the cats and then intentionally cutting shelter capacity in half, more animals will be saved over the course of the year or the next. If your head is spinning from the lack of logic, you are not alone. The argument was also lost on a reporter who noted that, in fact, by killing more cats and cutting shelter capacity in half, more cats are likely to die. A fact confirmed by the rising death toll for cats at Dane County Humane Society. Since Dr. Newberry started with the Dane County Humane Society in 2003, the death toll for cats has been steadily rising. In 2003, the year she began, the cat save rate was on a multi-year rise, culminating at about 80%. It has been declining every year since. Even while the society is getting richer, its revenue is growing by the millions, it is killing more cats than in recent history. According to a recently published report, the Dane County Humane Society's killing rate for cats reached 40% in October of this year, up from 29% in October 2006, and this despite falling intake rates. Despite the promise of more life-saving, in fact, quote, "The kill rate has not gone down. The shelter still kills about one-third of the nearly 7,000 animals it receives annually, and the number for cats are the worst. The shelter is actually taking in fewer felines, 3,000 so far this year compared to 3,800 in 2006, but is killing more of them. In 2003, the Humane Society killed 600 cats a year. By 2006, it was killing more than 1,200, and it's on track to kill an even higher number this year. On top of this, the Dane County Humane Society's new rules, quote, decreed that old or sick cats, even those with treatable conditions, would be killed. Kittens that arrived needing to be bottle-fed would also generally be killed, since the Humane Society limited the number of foster families available to care for them to just 10. This approach is contrary to the mandate of the no-kill equation, which provides the only model which has actually created success at life-saving in the U.S. and underscores why we must reject the Asilomar Accords as a model for the future. If one of its own drafters and signatories can keep half the cages empty, kill neonatals because she refuses to send them into foster care, turns away volunteer foster parents who come forward to help, and can restrict adoption hours without running afoul of the Asilomar Accords, then the Accords are little more than a tool to legitimize the adopt-some-and-kill-the-rest approach to sheltering the Dane County Humane Society appears to epitomize. Killing, it should be noted, as a result of regressive policies like keeping cages empty, limiting adoption days, restricting or refusing to foster animals, and turning volunteers away. Not content with causing a rising death toll for cats in Madison, where she lives and consults, Newberry promised a member of the media that her approach was going to be the national model of the future. It is a future Dr. Hurley, her partner and colleague at UC Davis, is trying to impose on communities and appears to have selected communities which are successfully moving toward no-kill. In Reno, Nevada, deaths have been cut by more than 50% for dogs and 80% for cats in less than 1 year, and adoptions have more than doubled, thanks to the Nevada Humane Society's embrace of the no-kill equation. in what appeared to be an attack on the success there, Dr. Hurley recently gave a public presentation in Reno at a veterinary conference to promote the idea that no-kill was not possible today, that killing was necessary, and that the end result of denying that would be warehousing and suffering animals. The audience, unfortunately, included animal control leadership who embraced Hurley's deadly empty cage philosophy. In an attempt to downplay the need for changes and promote the no-kill equals warehousing view, Dr. Hurley even traveled to Seattle, Washington, after the King County Council voted to require King County Animal Control to save 85% of the animals. Thankfully, the King County Council refused to hear from Hurley, turning her away because they felt her views of the King County shelter were not credible and because they did not want to hear from someone trying to derail their life-saving initiative. After years of hearing from groups like HSUS that their community was a national model and that others should follow in its footsteps, a citizens' committee impaneled by the King County Commissioners reviewed the shelter and came to a more sobering conclusion. Contrary to the claims of the National Sheltering Establishment, far from being a model animal control program or a recognized leader in the animal welfare field, we found King County's animal control program to be well beneath the standards that should be expected in a prosperous, compassionate, and generous community such as King County. Instead, quote, the animals suffer from high rates of disease, improper housing, inadequate exercise and social contact, a lack of basic comforts, and high levels of stress. The outreach programs designed to move these animals out of the shelter are paltry at best. This is what King County wants to change, and this is why they saw fit to reject the presentation of Dr. Hurley's proposed report. Given this antiquated view of sheltering, it should come as no surprise that Dr. Hurley's program at UC Davis lost a National Maddie's Fund grant for failure to meet its terms, and she has even lost favor with Wayne Pacelli, the CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, who can hardly be described as progressive. Moreover, it doesn't take a veterinary degree to figure out that the Dane County Humane Society model is an absolute failure. What Dr. Newberry calls counterintuitive is actually a contradiction. More cats are being killed at Dane County Humane Society because that is what happens when you kill more cats. More cats are being killed because when you intentionally keep half the cages empty, you have to kill more cats. More cats are being killed because some, like neonatal kittens, need foster care, and when you limit foster care, you end up killing the cats. More cats are being killed because you limit the number of adoptions when you cut back the days you are open for adoption. As more progressive shelters have demonstrated, disease can be reduced by more adoptions, which is undermined when Dane County cuts back adoption hours, sending animals to foster care, which is undermined when Dane County emasculates the program, using volunteers to socialize the animals, which is undermined when volunteers are turned away or leave in frustration, and practicing good animal care and husbandry, vaccination on intake, careful handling, thorough sanitizing and cleaning protocols. This has not been lost on the cat-loving public. According to volunteers, any respiratory infections at the shelter were not the result of having cats in all the cages. It was the result of shelter staff, quote, ignoring basic protocols, like washing their hands in between handling animals. Moreover, the shelter's director publicly admitted under a reporter's questioning that they have never had an epidemic of a serious disease. While Drs. Hurley and Newberry continue to dig trenches to the past, the rest of us are building bridges to our inevitable no-kill future, a future that promises more life, more compassion, more success, more programs to save the lives of animals. In doing so, we are rejecting the consensus of killing and rejecting the model of empty cages, lack of foster care, and killing because the animals do not meet draconian definitions of objective beauty or based on regressive and obsolete notions of adoptability. For in the end, our movement is about more than seeking shelters which simply label themselves as no-kill and proceed with business as usual, as the lead animal shelter did. Our movement is about action and results, not mere words and promises. What we seek is a modernization and transformation of our shelters, exchanging century-old obsolete forms of doing business, which recklessly embrace killing as a morally ethical means to an end, with shelters that uphold the life and welfare of animals as paramount and adjust their operations accordingly. what we demand and what the animals deserve are shelter directors and shelter experts who value life and keep pace with progress and innovation and with the new and exciting methods of animal shelter protocols developed over the last decade to keep animals clean, healthy, and well cared for while finding homes for all but hopelessly vicious dogs and irremediably suffering animals. These are the only models which veterinarians at one of the nation's most prestigious veterinary college should be using to train the next generation of veterinarians and to guide the current generation of shelter directors forward. As a university and as a training ground for new veterinarians, the UC Davis program should be at the forefront of progressive shelter practices and of the dynamic and exciting changes occurring in the field of animal sheltering as a result of the no-kill movement. Instead, Drs. Hurley and Newberry irresponsibly cling to the past by promoting methods of sheltering that are antiquated, inhumane, and lead to unnecessary killing. This would be the equivalent of a medical school continuing to teach its students that leeches, bloodletting, and magical incantations are a valid treatment for pneumonia in the face of proven alternatives like antibiotics, fluid therapy, and rest. It is nothing short of bad medicine and a textbook example of the Semmelweis reflex, the reaction so-called experts often exhibit when the status quo, which they represent, is challenged. Historians have coined the term the Semmelweis reflex to describe mob behavior in which a discovery of important scientific fact is punished rather than rewarded. In the 19th century, Dr. Semmelweis observed a higher incidence of deaths due to puerperal fever in maternity wards associated with teaching hospitals than in births attended by midwives. In trying to figure out why this fever was a hazard of giving birth in a hospital rather than at a home, Semmelweis opined that students and doctors might be carrying the diseases from autopsies they performed, while midwives who did not perform such procedures were not. Semmelweis also found that rigorous instrument cleaning and hand washing could bring the fever rate down to zero. Had doctors known at the time that germs caused disease, this finding would have been unremarkable. Unfortunately, Semmelweis's discovery predated the germ theory of disease. At the time, no one knew that asepsis was important. According to Semmelweis's critics, hand washing wasn't needed when they could clearly see that their hands had nothing on them, and tragically, they ignored his recommendations and continued with business as usual, with deadly results from their patients. Once germ theory became known and established, however, Semmelweis was vindicated for his foresight. Of course, sterility and instrument cleaning and hand washing has since become the norm. The housing, socialization, adoption, foster care, cleaning and vaccination protocols, medical and behavior rehabilitation efforts, and other programs and services pioneered in communities like San Francisco and copied elsewhere provide a life-affirming model of sheltering which provides high-quality care, reduced disease rates, even while keeping cages and kennels full as necessary, and animals in foster care while finding the vast majority of shelter animals loving new homes. These models were developed by caring and compassionate individuals, professionals, and in conjunction with veterinary institutions like Cornell University. Rather than attack Semmelweis, doctors should have simply washed their hands, since Semmelweis pointed out that this eliminated deaths, even though at the time no one could explain why. Similarly, rather than attack the methods of sheltering which allow the vast majority of animals to be saved, even while operating at capacity plus fostering, shelter administrators likewise should copy its precepts because it has been shown to work in other communities. But the vast majority of shelter directors refuse to innovate in this way. But something more nefarious was at work in Semmelweis's time than a failure of understanding about germs, and it is the same reflex which is at work in sheltering today. In fact, what occurred was that Semmelweis was fired because doctors felt he was criticizing the superiority of hospital births over home births, something that threatened their positions in the social hierarchy. And therein lies a rub. The archaic voices of tradition and sheltering are acting the same way as the doctors who put their own positions above their patients. They refuse to innovate and modernize precisely because they are threatened by the growing hegemony of the no-kill movement and what this means for their own stature in the movement. As a movement and as a nation, we have a choice. We can embrace the no-kill philosophy and the programs and services which make it possible, and we can end the unnecessary killing of 4.5 of the 5 million dogs and cats slaughtered each year in our nation's dog and cat pounds. Or we can adopt the model that will perpetuate it, the same model that caused 73 cats at the Dane County Humane Society to be killed for one reason and one reason only. They happened to enter a shelter run by a director who erroneously believed that sheltering experts like Drs. Hurley and Newberry actually had something to teach her. We'll be right back. Part 2. Cornell University, Tompkins County, and the culture of saving lives. When I arrived at Tompkins County's open admission animal control shelter, I found a shelter that was typical of those nationwide. The shelter had poor quality care, disease was common, medical treatment was spotty, and too many animals were being killed. In fact, killing was the all too common and all too easy way out. If an animal got sick, it was easy to kill that animal. If cages became full, the remainder were killed. If a dog didn't get adopted right away, the dog was killed. If a cat sneezed and did not respond to treatment within 4 days, the cat was killed. I did not travel 3,000 miles to continue the status quo. I resolved that despite our animal control contracts, which required us to keep the doors open to the influx of new animals, I would not respond by unnecessarily killing those already in our care. The trade-off, take one and kill another, was not ethical. It would have made us a dog pound and not what I wanted us to be in fact, rather than just in name, an animal shelter. No animal would be killed unless the animal was hopelessly ill or injured and the prognosis for rehabilitation was poor or grave. No dog would be killed unless the dog was vicious with a poor prognosis, and no feral cat would be killed simply for being feral. We were taking killing off of the table, but we did not, as the lead animal shelter's incompetent director, staff, and board did, simply allow animals to languish, get sick, and die. Nor was this the necessary outcome. As I indicated in my book Redemption, we can and should be a no-kill nation today. We can save over 90% of all impounded animals right now if all the shelters had the will and desire to do so, not just in pretty words like no one wants to kill, but in deeds by rigorous implementation of the programs and services of the no-kill equation. We are not a nation of too many animals, not enough homes. We are a nation of callous and uncaring shelter directors who find it easier to kill than do what is necessary to stop it. The fact that the programs and services of the no-kill equation, comprehensively implemented all the time so that they replace killing entirely, is not more common despite over a decade of proof that life-saving is impossible without them, puts the lie to the claim that no one wants to kill. And so rather than stop killing and allowing the animals to pile up, get sick, and die, I put the exit strategy in place. Adoptions, marketing, foster care, pet retention programs, trap-neuter release, spay-neuter, and more. And when it came to keeping animals healthy and treating already sick ones, I did what any responsible shelter director would do and what proved to be the animal's salvation time and time again. I turned to the community for help. In this context, I approached the Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine. My request to them was to create vaccination, cleaning, and treatment protocols which would allow me to keep every cat cage and dog kennel occupied, doubling up if necessary, and also treat animals with illnesses whose prognosis was better than poor, who would have been killed outright prior to my arrival. I wanted to increase the number of lives saved, while decreasing disease rates of animals dying in kennel, and reducing animal stress levels, even as I ran the shelter at capacity plus if needed. I told them killing as a management tool was no longer an option. Working with a committee made up of one private veterinarian in the community with experience in shelter medicine, a staff member from the Cornell Feline Health Center, and a veterinary epidemiologist from the Veterinary College faculty, and the staff and faculty of the Companion Animal Hospital at Cornell University, we created a sheltering model from 2001 to 2004 during my tenure that allowed us to reduce killing by 75%, reduce the return rate for adopted animals to negligible levels, the number of animals dying in kennel by nearly 90%, reduce both the frequency and severity of illness, and reduce length of stay to an average of 8 days from the previous administration. We did the same for dogs with behavior problems and aggression, working in concert with the Department of Behavior Medicine at Cornell, with similar results. When presented with an opportunity to create a life-affirming model that took killing off of the table, the veterinary team at Cornell came through, and from 2001 to 2004, the results were dramatic. Disease rates declined, length of stay declined, stress levels declined, return rates declined, while adoptions, foster care, rescue transfers, and life-saving reached all-time highs. While I was at Tompkins County, however, the shelter medicine program at UC Davis published a paper on kennel cough in shelter dogs. The information regarding treatment and prevention of kennel cough was very good, but the policy conclusion that shelters should kill kennel cough dogs so that people would not look at shelters as having inferior quality animals was not only a non sequitur, it was obscene. The contrast to the Cornell-Tompkins approach could not have been starker. After I publicly protested, the offending paragraphs in the UC Davis paper were removed, promoting draconian policy conclusions that do not follow from the medical facts has been the central flaw in the UC Davis Shelter Medicine Program approach since its inception, and it continues to this very day under Drs. Hurley and Newberry. Rather than focus on a life-affirming basis for preventing disease and treating and caring for shelter animals, they bring predetermined agendas to their work, resulting in policy conclusions and recommendations to shelters that continue an unnecessary regime of killing. And here is the crux of the problem. Drs. Newberry and Hurley, with the blessing of Pam McLeod-Smith, have lost sight of what the mission of a humane society is. The fundamental mission of a humane society is to save lives. Everything a shelter does, it should do to stop killing. Instead, killing is simply one more tool in the medicine cabinet of Dr. Hurley and Dr. Newberry. It sits right beside the vaccinations, the parvicides, and the antibiotics. But all those other things are tools to keep animals from having to be killed. The reason we vaccinate, clean, sanitize, socialize, foster, and all those other programs is so we don't have to kill animals. When UC Davis says that dogs with kennel cough undermine public perception of the quality of shelter animals, why that might be important if it were true, it is not, is that if animals do not get adopted because adopters don't come, animals will be killed. Everything they are claiming to try to achieve is a means to the end of not killing. And so while vaccinations, parvicides, and antibiotics help us reach the goal of not killing, killing by its very act does not. It is an inherent contradiction to use killing as a means to not killing. It simply does not make sense. When you cut back programs like foster care or the number of cages available to house animals, both of which preclude killing, you don't get closer to the goal, you move further away because the act of killing makes not killing impossible. If we could kill our way out of this problem, given that this is the one thing shelter directors do in abundance, we would have been a no-kill nation long ago. The response by Drs. Hurley and Newberry will be immediately obvious because it provides the rationale for the Dane County fiasco. They argue you have to kill some to save the majority of others. But there are four good reasons to reject this. First, this is inherently unethical. A humane society's mission is to protect animals, not to kill them when they are not suffering. Second, the rationale offered is not true. Before Dr. Newberry started at the Dane County Humane Society, the agency was saving 80% of all impounded cats. For 5 years, it has been steadily increasing the number and percentage of cats killed, despite falling cat impounds. 5 years of data is powerful proof that their view is simply wrong. Third, this is just a variant of the adopt some and kill the rest approach to sheltering, wrapped in the language of veterinary medicine, which we have been living under for over a century. Fourth, the rationale presupposes that you can't save them all, reserving killing to truly hopelessly ill, injured, or irremediably suffering animals. In short, it presupposes pet overpopulation, which I spent 238 pages debunking in the book Redemption. When the UC Davis Shelter Medicine Program focuses on medicine, the information can be helpful to shelters. When they allow the veterinarians involved who come from kill-oriented shelters to make biased and predetermined shelter operations policy decisions, such as kill all kennel cough dogs, which do not follow from the medical aspects. Kennel cough is not only easily treatable and easily prevented, it is self-limiting, meaning it can clear up on its own, particularly after adoption. UC Davis undermines its own reputation and puts the lives of animals at risk, because the imprimatur of UC Davis gives the policy conclusion the gravitas of legitimacy it does not always deserve. It should not be advocating pro-killing positions when the conclusions are based on impermissible and irrelevant and ultimately false criteria unrelated to the medical facts. Unfortunately, since joining the UC Davis Shelter Medicine Program, Dr. Hurley and Dr. Newberry appear to be carrying on this tradition. Given their background working for kill-oriented shelters, it is not surprising, but that doesn't make it any less tolerable. They should focus on medicine and not anti-no-kill rhetoric, based on facile comparisons and other false premises, wrapped in the language of veterinary medicine and stamped with the UC Davis seal of approval. In doing so, they also undermine one of the chief goals of the UC Davis program, quote, to improve the quality of life of animals in shelters through improvements in veterinary preventative medicine and management of disease. It goes without saying that there can be no quality of life when an animal is dead. But at the end of the day, the only thing that matters are results. Do the animals live? Or do the animals die? And here, there can be no debate. The approach of Dr. Newberry in her own shelter of Madison, Wisconsin, working with Dr. Hurley, has failed, and it has failed miserably. And too many cats have been needlessly, though purposely, killed as a tragic result. We'll be right back. That's it for now. Thank you for joining me. I am Nathan Winograd, reminding you that we are over 100 million Americans strong, fighting an entrenched bureaucracy of a few thousand animal shelter directors mired in killing and protected by their large national allies like the Humane Society of the United States. Never surrender, never give in, never doubt that we will succeed. A no-kill nation is within our reach.
You have been listening to Animal Trust Radio, the voice of a no-kill nation, all rights reserved.